Valar Doharis.
And welcome back to the Faceless Men podcast covering HBO's Game of Thrones television series. I'm your host, Michael.
And I'm your host, Jesse.
And our awesome music is supplied by Remix Fix, and you can find them on soundcloud.com/remix-fix. You can find us on iTunes, you can find us on Stitcher, you can find us at madbrewlabs.com, you can find us on Twitter at FacelessMenCast, you can find us on Facebook.com/FacelessMenCast, and you can reach us via email, FacelessMenCast@gmail.com. Thanks for your feedback so far. We are past the hump. This is Season 4, Episode 6, The Laws of Gods and Men. Director is Alex Sakharov. Teleplay is Brian Cogman. I believe he wrote the last episode, too. The original air date was May 11th, 2014. And there's a slight decrease in viewers by about a million. We're down to 6.4 million viewers. Still a lot.
Wow, I wonder what happened there.
I don't know. I bet they're sorry that they missed Tyrion's fucking sweet-ass scene.
Yeah, that was a nice dialogue.
Because the previous episode, while it was pretty good, I don't think it was as good as this episode. It
provided a lot of information. It wasn't as exciting.
Yeah. The director, he returns after directing two previous episodes of Game of Thrones, including What Is Dead May Never Die from Season 2, and I believe he also directed The Climb from Season 3. Correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, but I believe both of those had strong Jon Snow storylines. So The Climb was when he was with the wildlings climbing the wall.
Oh, then this is definitely a divergence for him.
So going to the opening sequence, we finally get a new place in the opening sequence. Bravos. What did you notice about that?
It was a nice, it's the only clearly defined statue.
Yeah, it was a colossus, right? So yeah. That's obviously has a lot of Greek influence as far as George R. R. Martin's vision of what the city looks like. And it also has a nice piggy bank. Did you notice that? The coins coming down?
I did not notice that.
Yeah, so it has like these paths where the coins are rolling down, and it comes, and eventually the bank rolls up, and it spins. You know, like how sometimes you have that donation stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Where you can put the coins in, and it spins down in the funnel? That's exactly what the coins were doing on the Braavos animation. We go straight from the opening sequence into Braavos, and we see Stannis sailing between the legs of the Colossus into Braavos. So,
I guess that rules out our pirate theory in the whole...
It does kill my pirate theory. Or at least it eventually killed my pirate theory. There for a while, I was like, ooh, this is looking good for my pirate theory.
Yeah.
But they brought it back. But a question, according to mythology, the Colossus actually walked, right? Like, it wasn't just a statue.
You're asking the wrong person here. I'm not caught up on Greek mythology.
So, it just begs the question, is it just a statue in this world where we have dragons and White Walkers? Could the Colossus be something else?
Braavos has stood for a long time.
Could be. It'd be interesting to see that thing move. It does have a broken sword, though, so I don't know what else. I mean, it is large. I guess it'd just stomp on shit.
Large and made of stone, if it continued to be made of stone.
And we see Stannis is kept waiting by the Iron Bank. He's in a waiting room.
Man, he does not look happy to even have come here.
Nah, yeah, I'm pretty sure it's a blow to his pride to have to ask for money.
Yeah. Like, he seems to blame Davos pretty squarely.
Sacrificing people at stakes is no problem for Stannis, but having to wait to see the Iron Bank is a problem. What an ass. I'm liking Stannis less and less. I'm liking Davos more and more. Started out, I wasn't such a big fan of Davos because...
I don't know, I've always been a fan of Davos.
It started out, I thought he was a weak character at the beginning, but he's grown stronger, especially, like, since the dungeon.
They've shown him
I've
more.
Liked him, yeah. I've liked him better.
He keeps getting treated shittier and shittier, though.
Yeah, well, at least he's not in the dungeon. He's on a fast track.
Not yet. And I don't think he'll be going to the dungeon anymore.
Yeah, well, he did kind of redeem himself, as we'll see at the end of the scene. So, they finally come out, right as it looked like Stannis was getting ready to leave, almost like, well, are they listening on the other side of those big-ass doors? Which is another thing this episode. I noticed there's lots of loud doors. Did you notice that?
No. I liked the way the bank looked, yeah.
Well, I was just thinking, in this scene and the last scene, there's doors opening and closing, and there's a lot of enhanced sound effect for the doors. It's just something I picked up on watching the episode. But they start into a conversation here with Stannis. And I guess these bank executives, they didn't name themselves, did they?
Nope.
They're just
representatives
in the machine, right? Yep. So these bank executives are having a conversation, a tough conversation with Stannis. They're like...
It was very one-sided.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Davos introduces Stannis, right, as the one true king and...
The full title,
right? And then the banks shoot back. Well, certainly, right now, this throne is occupied by one Tommen Baratheon, and then adds the full title there. Why should we give you money, man? So they have this conversation about books.
Yeah.
They're like, in your books are filled with words like usurper and madman.
blood right.
Yeah. Our books, they're filled with numbers. We like their story better. It's a simpler story.
Yeah, but it's, I don't think that paints a very inspiring picture, their numbers, their current numbers anyway.
Well, yeah, that's, you know, and they take him to task, right? How many men did Stannis have?
He had 4,000.
How many ships?
32.
That's not at the bottom of Blackwater Bay.
They were quick to pull that one out.
Do they have any way to feed these assholes?
I guess Dragonstone does none of its own agriculture.
Right, so it has no agriculture because it's probably a rocky island, right?
Yeah.
The whole time that they're basically talking down to Stannis, which he obviously does not like, Stannis is giving Davos the stink eye.
As if their treatment of him is somehow Davos's fault.
It is his fault. It brought him here.
That is
his idea. Whether or not it was a good idea anyways.
Did Stannis even have a plan, though?
Stannis's plan was to sacrifice more motherfuckers for the Red God.
I don't think that's...
It's not really a plan, no.
Yeah.
It's not gonna, that's just going to make you lose people, right?
Yeah. That's not going to gain. That's attrition on your side. That doesn't even help.
Right. I don't think... Yeah. He didn't have a game plan. I guess his game plan was waiting for the Red God to do something. The God of Light. The Lord of Light. I think that was his game plan. Seriously. He's trusting a lot on Melisandre.
But she didn't even have... She just tells him to be patient, doesn't she?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they have to sacrifice more blood into the fucking fires. But Davos doesn't let it settle, right? So Stannis is getting ready to leave, but Davos jumps up and is like, hey, this is how it fucking is. First of all, that Tommen guy, he's a product of incest. He's not a true Baratheon. Stannis is the one true leader. The only guy that's left. In all of Westeros, the only leader that's left. I guess he has a good argument for.
He's pretty much the only king claimant left, correct?
Right.
Yeah, he's the closest, basically, out of that whole War of Kings thing, he's the only one that's actually left standing.
Right.
Besides the whole...
The War of the Five Kings?
Yeah.
Right, so he's the only one left standing. Decimated, but standing. So Davos takes another, he like changes tack, and he takes another approach. You got this young guy on the throne, the real power behind the throne. Do you know who the real power behind the throne is? And of course they know.
Oh, yeah.
They're, it's Tywin without a
doubt.
Lannister.
Without a doubt.
It's Tywin Lannister. And he's like, when that guy, how old is he? 60-something? 67, I think they said. When he dies, is that going to leave King's Landing? Cersei and Tommen. And Cersei's a crazy bitch.
Yep.
It's basically what it boils down to.
He said everyone hates Cersei, I think is how he put it. Her own people hate her.
Because she sucks. Just a wretched person. She's a wretched person.
Yeah.
When Margaery does all that stuff for the poor... It's like a knife in her back when she sees that shit.
Oh, yeah.
So she has no, right, she has no goodwill from the people.
He brought up a point there. He said, are those people going to pay you back? I'm guessing those people probably know.
It'd bring up.
The exact amount that the people in King's Landing have borrowed. And it's got to be high. It's got to be really, really high.
It's at least
high.
Double digits.
And then you think about it, they're probably doing finances separate. So you have the king, like King's Landing, the throne, and then you have House Lannister. How much have they individually borrowed?
Lannister, I don't think, has borrowed anything.
Well, we revealed last time that they're broke.
They are broke, but that's because they gave it all to the crown. $3 million, right? Originally, the debt was, at the beginning of the series, $6 million. Half of that is to the Lannisters.
Ah, yeah.
And then since this shit began, they haven't
more
gold.
They had been loaning money to the...
Yeah.
I didn't realize they loaned every, like, their last of it.
Well, I mean, must have, because their gold mines ran dry.
Yeah.
Technically, the Lannisters don't owe any debt, or maybe they do. I'm just missing something here.
What if they do?
The crown is the guy that... The crown is holding the debt. Now, here's a question, though. I mean, even if Stannis wins the war with the Iron Banks backing, how is he going to pay back all that fucking money? I mean, it's going to take forever.
Yep.
To pay that back.
I think that's why Davos.
So, because he's also, they're not just going to.
He's a man who gives payment.
Right. Yeah, with his nine, or you know, his. I guess we can call him odd-handed or something, even-handed. Davos the even-handed. The Iron Bank, I don't think the Iron Bank is just going to excuse the current debt of the crown.
Oh,
so
no,
if
definitely not.
Tommen Baratheon is displaced by Stannis Baratheon, they still have the same debt, so...
Yeah, but which one of them is more capable of paying it back? Especially if you count in time, because Tywin...
Well, if you...
He's kind of old, you know?
I don't know. I'm the thing about the big picture, so if they both engage in another war, that's going to eat up resources.
Yeah.
It's less resources to pay back the bank.
To pay back the bank? Well, they'll have to borrow more if Stannis gets another army.
Well, they just did borrow, as we saw in the next scene when Davos comes to talk to...
Well, I'm talking about King's Landing. Like
well, they won't be able to borrow
anymore. There was a bit of threat in there. Davos said, you know... this war is not over until Stannis lives.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So yeah, right. So even if they didn't back Stannis, then there'd still be war.
They would still have to back King's
Landing.
They're
not getting paid.
Yeah. Yep. I felt that was a bit of an implied threat. You're going to have to keep dropping money in King's Landing, or you can go ahead and loan the money to us. We'll take the country and we'll pay you back.
Or they could have not lent anybody any money.
That's true. Stop, cut off all things, yeah. All ties.
If I was the bank, I probably wouldn't have lent any fucking money. But they did lend money, as we see in the next scene, because Davos comes to talk to Salladhor Saan, and he's living it up with a couple whores in the baths, telling some, I guess, famous pirate joke, right? So, talking about how, there's pirates, get my red shirt. There's pirates, there's get my red shirt. Why do you get your red shirts? Because if I'm cut, you don't see me bleeding.
There's lots of pirates.
There's lots of pirates, get my brown pants. I guess that's so you can't see it when he shits himself. And the whores already knew it. They knew the punchline. And Davos tells him that we're leaving tomorrow, right?
Yep, tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow morning. So he doesn't get time to enjoy himself.
He seems kind of put out.
Even after Davos gives him that weird-ass wallet of money.
Yeah.
That was an interesting carrying case for money.
It
was like a leather satchel that then had
tubes.
Coin tubes or something. Well, they weren't really tubes because you could see the coins, but it's almost like the shit that the people at arcades wear on their hips, you know, where they can like bam, 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 count out the coins.
Yeah,
from
but
there.
You see him pull the top off one and he just dumps coins out.
Yeah. So. That's a lot of coins.
Yeah.
I guess there's a chest waiting with his wife.
He didn't seem to enjoy that either.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's funny, though, but I think that's not why he's not enjoying himself. I think secretly, Salladhor Saan was hoping that he was out, because if they couldn't, you know, obviously if they cannot continue paying for his services, he has an excuse to get the hell out.
Yep.
But now it looks like he's in it for the long run, and maybe he's not happy about that. So I wonder if Salladhor Saan will have a bigger role in the future, as far as, like, betrayal.
That's an interesting...
He is a pirate.
He is a pirate. He goes with the highest bidder, probably. Mm. It'd just be business to him.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll have to see. So we go up to the Dreadfort. This was fast. But Yara's moving on the Dreadfort.
Going to rescue Theon.
Yeah. Well, my question was, when they're launching this, and we saw Ramsay in there with these sick girlfriend, was I thought he was supposed to already been traveling south or whatever to the moat.
Yeah,
same time
charged
Locke.
With going to the moat.
Yeah, so the same time Locke went north to the wall, he was supposed to be going south, but he's not.
Yeah, maybe this is slightly after that, only slightly after Locke left. I doubt Locke just made it really quickly to the...
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be some time here, but there's no reference saying, you know, like, 2 weeks previously.
Yeah.
Regardless, Yara is making a move on the Dread Fort, and she gets all the way to Theon.
Yep, and this goes back to my prediction that he is truly broken.
Yeah, he still has his moment to shine, though, because he's going to have to impersonate himself or his former self.
I liked that battle scene, though. And then, I don't know why they ran. It was just a few dogs, right?
Yeah, it's just a few dogs, and I thought they were actually outnumbered.
Watch her throw that axe in the very beginning, and she's clearly dangling from that wall when that guy looks over and then I'm pretty sure she tossed the axe. It looked like she tossed the axe and just completely splits that guy's head open. Why didn't she just throw the axe at Ramsay? Yeah. He was clearly bending over to open the cage. It's not like you can dodge that quick.
I don't know. I thought Ramsay had more people. They're in the Dreadfort. Obviously, there's more people coming. Yeah. The alarms have been sounded.
Yeah.
So the likelihood of her escaping alive was decreasing rapidly.
Yeah, but if you're going to, you might as well go take somebody with you.
There's not...
I mean, that's...
She escapes, so
she
there's
was
no
halfway
one to take
there for
with.
Vengeance, right? She was there a little bit for vengeance.
Well, she's not there as a suicide mission.
No, but, I mean...
Okay, so here's Ramsay the operative... Right, I know Jesse's always on the suicide mission, but some people don't fucking want to die.
I'm just saying she was there a little bit for vengeance, and there was her target right there. Toss the axe, run. Even if you don't get Theon, you killed the person who did that to
Maybe she already tossed the axe and was stuck in somebody.
She had it with her in her hands. Because I was like, I was so sure. I'm just like, why don't you just toss that thing and just kill that guy? I know, that's not good for whatever story they're currently working on.
Yeah, that doesn't fit the storyline, dude. But she flees, and then people at the boats are like, where's your brother?
She's like, well, he's dead.
He's dead. Except for when he shows up later, because Ramsay has a gift. So Yara got all the way to Theon. Theon would not come out of the cage. And when she tried to force him, he bit her.
He made it out of the cage. They pulled him out.
Right. Well, I mean, he didn't really get out of the cage, though.
Yeah, he went back in.
So as a reward, Ramsay's giving Theon a bath.
That was a pretty, that was kind of wicked, because my aunt used to have a dog, a shelter dog that she rescued that clearly been abused. And every time you made any kind of sudden movements, that dog would just like absolutely flinch. That's exactly what Theon looked like.
Oh, I'm sure. And I think Theon didn't know if it was really a reward or not.
Yeah. You see, Ramsay put his hand on the side of the tub and shrinks down like,
yeah,
oh, God.
What are you going to do?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? And then there's some sick, twisted shit. He's like, do you love me? Of course, my lord. A special request for you. You're going to go impersonate someone who you're not. And that person is Theon Greyjoy. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I'm sure he will fuck over because obviously his storyline is all about fucking over people. I think he's going to fuck over the Greyjoys, but eventually he's going to fuck over Ramsay. The end game for this storyline, Theon eventually fucks over Ramsay.
I think given enough time away from Ramsay, he might be able to come back at least to some semblance of Theon Greyjoy, but I don't think dude is broken.
He's never going to do
exactly what Ramsay wants him to do.
He'll never be the same. I'm not saying he's ever going to return to the way he was, but the end game here is that he's going to fuck over Ramsay. Like, that's going to happen.
I can't see him doing it intentionally anymore. I think he's super broken.
Then how do you see this storyline ending?
I have no idea anymore.
The only thing that makes sense is to string along. First of all, they're going to string along readers/watchers thinking, when's Theon going to do it? When they fucking destroyed your hopes and dreams, that's when he'll do it.
That just seems the way they...
I'm just saying, that's the way it plays out. I am confident that this is the way that this storyline is
going to
play out.
Which is why I am confident that it's not going to play out that way.
So we go from Theon / Reek to Meereen, and we see that the dragons are a bitch to maintain.
You see some people cowering, some dragons eating somebody's flock of goats.
Right, so they're just like running around the countryside, burninating the villages.
That is exactly what they're
doing. That's what they're doing, frying goats and eating them.
Well, I like my food cooked, too.
Which is a nice transition to Daenerys, who's basically hosting supplicants.
Passing judgment for people.
Well, people are coming in with their problems, and she's there to solve them, right?
Yeah.
And, of course, the first person that shows up is the goat herder, whose goats were eaten by her dragons. And she promises to pay him the value, 3 times their value. Which, of course, he's like, fucking awesome!
Yeah.
I'm out of this goat herding shit! No more of that! But her next supplicant is the noble Hizadar, and he's there to request what?
He wants his father taken down.
Yeah, his father is one of the 163, 162 nobles that she crucified. And this is where we had a conversation a while back where I asked, do you think this is going to come back to haunt her? Dealing justice to the injustice. Blindly. And you're like, nah, I don't think so.
I still don't think it hasn't harmed her.
Well, bullshit. Emotionally, it took a toll here.
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, well...
Because she seemed pretty pumped after she solved that goat issue.
It's only a small leap from here for something really bad to happen. Like, she screws herself because she's meeting out all this justice blindly.
Yeah, that definitely could have been vetted a bit better.
So, he explains that his father was actually one of the vocal opponents of crucifying those children. And he's also responsible for overseeing the building of a lot of the towers and monuments and the pyramid in which she now rules.
Building her? I thought it was upkeep.
No, I'm pretty sure he was
restoration.
Restoration or building. He was in charge of making it what it is.
Yeah.
Of course, that was probably with slave labor.
Yeah, almost definitely.
So I'm not saying I got a bleeding heart for this guy, because I don't. Fuck that guy. He was a noble. He owned slaves. He probably used slaves to build this fucking pyramid.
My theory on it is that's still justice, because if you might speak up, but that doesn't absolve you of responsibility for that act. Yeah, you might not have participated, but you still stood by and did nothing.
Well, he did do something. He spoke out against it.
So that's all you're required to do?
Well, what other actions would have not met with the end of his life? How far are you supposed to go?
Supposed to do whatever it takes.
So how far do you go, Jesse?
Just saying.
I mean, standing up against one's peers is pretty fucking hard to do.
I'm just saying that doesn't absolve you of, like, not getting justice. So
well, what are you saying? He didn't crucify those children.
No.
He was not... Okay, so why does he get the justice?
I don't think that he's completely absolved responsibility.
What about all the other people? Like, what about the people in Braavos? They're fairly close. They're on the same continent, right? Essos, by the way. They're on the same continent. They just stood by while Slavers and Slavers Bay did all this shit. Are they responsible?
Maybe a tiny bit.
I'm just saying it's hard to spread that responsibility shit around. But all he wants is to bury his father, and she grants it. She grants, you know, she's like, go bury your father. But again, this is that whole justice thing coming back to haunt her instead of taking the route of mercy, which may have been the better option here.
So I said, what is justice but vengeance by a third party? Yeah.
And then we learn that ruling ain't easy. Because after this guy, there's like 212 more people to entertain.
And Alia, after this, I think she did a good job of looking decidedly wrung out.
I don't know less if she's enthusiastic,
because she was pretty enthusiastic after this.
Wrung out is not the word.
Everybody
I'd
was
use.
Smiling just a little bit after the whole goat thing, and then that happened, and everybody's like, "Oh crap!"
Wrung out is not the term I'd use. Disappointed is the term I'd use. This is not what she. This is not living up to her expectation of what a queen does.
She likes giving money out to goat herders, but
well, I think she's a person of action, not a person of sitting on a throne and listening to people's problems.
I definitely have to agree with that.
As a ruler, that's something you have to do. Leadership. That's part of the toll of leadership. We go back to King's Landing, and we see this meeting of the small council. And Oberyn's like, so what's my title going to be? You know, master of coin, master of ships. I think he said sheep. I thought he said sheeps. Master of sheeps. And then Mace is like, no, I'm the master of ships. Me and Tywin decided on this before, you know, before you were extended an invitation. Do you think Oberyn really fucking gives a flying fuck about what title he has?
Nope, not in the least bit.
I think he was just wanting to get a reaction out of someone at the table.
Mace was pretty quick to jump up there.
So, also, Oberyn is the only one who doesn't stand when the hand comes in.
I think that shows just how many fucks he gives.
Yeah, he gives no fucks. So Tywin comes in, everybody stands up, except for Oberyn. We learn some interesting stuff from Varys, right? Or at least they learned some interesting stuff from Varys. We already knew this. The Hound is in the Riverlands. So he says that the Hound has been spotted in the Riverlands, but you know what he didn't say?
He didn't mention anything about Arya.
Yeah, and you can't tell me that guy does not know. If the Hound was spotted, then Arya was spotted.
Yeah, a little girl. Or
a little
some,
boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. With a small companion, it would take very little deduction to figure out.
That makes me wonder if Varys isn't...
I'm sure he's keeping that near and dear. He's keeping that close to the heart.
Whether he cares about Arya or even knows that it's Arya.
I think he does not want her to get caught.
Or if he does, he's the one.
We don't know. We don't really know. I mean...
We don't know what his endgame is.
He says he's there to protect the kingdom. His end game is having a stable kingdom. Making Westeros an awesome place to live is what his goal is. Stated goal. Not in those words, but that's pretty much what he meant.
Order to banish his chaos.
Right. So Arya may be like something he keeps in his back pocket for something later. They put a bounty on the Hound's head. Varys says 10 silver stags or something like that is enough to, as Tywin put it, make someone foolish enough to go after the Hound.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Tywin actually makes it 10 times that. No wonder the fucking financial stability of King's Landing is at stake. So 100 silver stags for the Hound. There's going to be a lot of people jumping at that and dying.
Yeah, dying a lot. A lot of dying.
And then we see that Oberyn has actually been to Essos, right? So
yeah.
He's seen the Unsullied in action.
And he said he was impressed.
He was impressed. And that's, he doesn't strike me as a guy that says he was impressed by much.
Yeah, especially as worldly as he seems to be, or professes to be.
And then, they're also like, she has 8,000 Unsullied, she has a mercenary group called the Second Sons, and she has dragons. Tywin kind of downplays the dragons part, right? And so does Cersei. Baby dragons. But Varys is like, and they're getting bigger every year, and they're fucking way bigger than they started out.
What is that he said? He said, dragons haven't won a war in so many years.
That was Tywin.
Yeah.
Tywin says, dragons haven't won a war in 100 years. Armies win them all the time. Maybe he's not reading the reports. He's not reading the intelligence reports very deeply.
Because
the dragons were responsible for them sacking Astapor, or wherever it was that had the Unsullied. They're the whole reason they got the Unsullied. So
Someone
the dragons are responsible for their first army.
Yeah.
After the small council is over, we see that Varys is standing in front of the throne, just kind of admiring it. I don't know what this means, and along with his nod to the throne before he leaves the scene, but Oberyn comes in, right? Oberyn surprises Varys because he's able to
pick out his dialect and
his
picks
lack
out his
of dialect, right? Yeah. He said that he's got removed all of that dialect from his language, and he's like, I can pick that up too. And he's able to place Varys as being someone from Essos. And then he's like, you should join us. You know, he likes Varys, right? So he's like, you should join us. Yeah, the Lady Sand basically would find you very interesting. And it's like, we have boys, not that you can do anything. You were interested in boys, right, before? And Ferris is like, no. Oh, well, you know, don't take offense, but I would have not...
I would have not known that.
I would not have figured you as a person who likes girls. And he's basically like, I don't like girls either. So that strikes Oberyn as very strange, because obviously Dorne is a place of passion. Lots of passion.
What was his quote there? He said something about it keeps you free.
Free from desire.
Yeah, free from desire. So it keeps you, basically, it keeps your priorities straight.
He says he's seen what desire has done to the kingdom. Talking about Jaime and Cersei and the ancestral inheritors to the throne.
I wonder how much he knows about Baelish's plot, like the whole thing. I'm pretty sure he knows.
I bet he knows something.
More than he's letting on there.
Right. He knows something. He's pretty well informed. When you remove your desire, you're left with a lot of time to pursue other things. And Oberyn's like, well, what kind of things do you pursue? And he nods at the throne. What do you...
I don't think he has any claim or wants anything to do with that throne.
It's kind of been established that he's kind of like a benefactor to the realm, right? So he wants to protect the realm.
Maybe that's what his nod meant.
Right.
So realm instead of
safekeeping. Safekeeping of the throne or something like that.
Or maybe he's thinking now there's no qualified candidates. I should be on that throne.
I don't think he'd think that. He would never last on the throne.
No. He doesn't make any moves that might get him any kind of hurt.
So, I mean, even Oberyn says something to the effect that he's like Lord Varys. And Varys is very quick to point out, look, you know, I'm not a lord. And no one's underneath any obligation to call me a lord. Oberyn's like, yeah, people still do. And Varys is like, yeah, they do. But I think they only do that because they respect his informational network. They wouldn't, no one would suffer a eunuch to sit on the throne, I don't think.
I'm going to have to agree with that statement. I don't.
Because what happens when he dies? He has no heir.
No chance at
heir. There's a power vacuum, right? It's just delaying the inevitable.
There's something I want to point out. You notice that Tyrell was so quick to defend his position on the small council, and then they use him as an errand boy.
Yeah, he is a yes man. He is very much a yes man.
He's like, go get my pen.
Yeah, my pen and paper.
Yeah.
I don't know. When he stood up, was that look a look of pride? Like, oh, look what Tywin sent me to do? Or is like, oh, my place here is an errand boy?
I think the latter. But he was going to be prideful about it, even though he was going to, you know.
Yeah, he held his head up high.
Yeah.
But you see, it was Tywin's order to chain the imp. Do you think the chains really matter?
No. Nope.
Where's he going to run to on those short little legs?
Yeah.
He probably could do some, at least an outburst, grab somebody's dagger and stab someone. So yeah, I guess maybe it was probably a good call to chain Tyrion up. Who knows what he'll do. When Jaime's having the chains put on, of course, he's like, really? And Jaime's like, it's father's orders. And Tyrion bites back, well, we mustn't disappoint father. So he's on trial. He's in the accused box in the courtroom, which is the throne room. And we see Tommen. He makes an official statement. Looks like he practiced that with Tywin.
Yeah.
I'm going to excuse myself from this, and Lord Hand Tywin will be taking over, protector of the realm, and Prince Oberyn will be a judge, and Mace Tyrell will be a judge, and then he leaves.
I figured it probably wouldn't be good for the story or anything else, but I was just hoping that for a minute, Tommen would just be like, you're freed.
Oh, yeah. I didn't.
I don't think.
I was pausing myself when he was sitting there, because I didn't think.
Because he just, he stood up and then smiled right before he started talking. I'm like, oh, he's going to do it. And then no.
He's a yes man.
Yeah.
Tommen's Tywin's lackey. He's a puppet.
Agreed.
I think he's a good-natured puppet, but he's still a puppet. He's too young to be anything else. But when they're marching Tyrion to the box, you hear Kingslayer. Like, Kingslayer! I wonder if that was that for Tyrion? Was that for Jaime? Was it for both of them?
The Kingslayer slightly,
brothers?
I can't remember. Did it sound kind of happy? I remember hearing that.
It was just loud. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the tone was. So once it gets up on the stand...
I will say it looks like it might have been built for him, because it is extra... Like, when he steps up into it, he is... It's like perfect height. Did you notice that? Like, well, his wrists are right at the level where... At the edge of it, like, with the top. So I think a normal stand would have... He would have been...
Dwarfed
him? You know, it would have been up by his head. His hands would have been up by his head to chain him up or whatever. I think that it was...
Yeah, they probably threw a box in there.
Yeah.
And of course, it would suck to be filming that and you don't get his facial... Because a lot of his acting there was with his face.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't say anything. See Tywin's asking, you know, it's like, so in your opinion, well, first of all, he straight up asking, did you kill Joffrey? And he's like, no. Well, in your opinion, what happened? He choked on his pigeon pie?
Whether it was the pie or the pigeon, leave me out of it.
And then pretty much all through this, I think Tyrion's kind of like, he's looking around like he's surprised at all this.
Did anyone see Bronn in the crowd?
I did not see Bronn. They probably didn't allow him to be there.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. But he is a knight, so He had the right to be there. He said, I killed the right. Remember that?
That's right.
He is a knight.
What was the first guy? The Sir...
Sir Marin.
Marin. Yeah, Sir Marin.
The Kingsguard.
Right, and he's describing the instance where he comes up and slaps Joffrey. And of course, you know, Marin's not...
The multiple instances.
Yeah. Marin's not describing the whole situation, right? So that, and then Tyrion's like, why don't you tell him what was happening? You were ripping the clothes off of Sansa, and then, of course, Tywin's like, no, silence, you can't speak unless you're told to speak.
That clearly shows how much of a sham.
Yeah, like, it's this is all a sham. So... they get him.
By the way, Marin. don't talk to these witnesses. You're not allowed to say a word in your own defense.
Yeah. They call Marin, they call Cersei, and she gives that famous quote, and then they call Meister Pycelle, and he's talking about how his huge inventory of poisons was stolen after Tyrion put him in the dungeons. No one bothered to ask, hey, Meister Pycelle, why the fuck do you have all these goddamn poisons? Not just run-of-the-mill poisons, but, like, poisons that are fucking rare, right?
Yeah, super rare.
Super rare. No one bothered to stop and ask that. Oh.
I was curious about that, too.
Is anybody else asking? Like, why is
that a
guy...
big deal? Is that something that maesters normally do?
I don't know.
I just have this massive stock of poison, by the way.
Maybe they use it to make antidotes. And then they call Varys. And I was surprised Varys testified.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Or gave as strong a testimony as he did.
Right. That was pretty... And then Tyrion even asked him, because before the episode began, they did the flashback of the post-Battle of Blackwater, where Tyrion's recovering from his injuries, and Varys is telling him, it'll never be in the history books, but, you know, I won't forget what you did. You know, you saved King's Landing. And then Tyrion stops, asks Tywin, can I ask the witness one question? And Tywin allows it.
I think he knew it wasn't going to be something that necessarily would free.
The question wasn't asked to exonerate himself. The question was asked like, hey, you know, was that a bunch of bullshit that you fucking told me?
Yeah.
And I think Varys kind of said that, no, you know, I don't forget. Which I think may be important.
Yeah.
So Varys is probably covering his own ass here. This is more like, there's nothing I can do for you, so I gotta play the game type thing, I think is what Varys is doing here. And then we break. So they take a break, a recess. They take a recess for an hour, right? And in this time, Jaime goes to his father and asks for what?
He wants Tyrion saved. Don't give him the death penalty.
But what is he offering?
He offers him himself to be the heir that Tywin needs him to be.
That's right. So Jaime is willing to give up his oath, break his oath again, give up membership in the Kingsguard,
go back
to Casterly Rock.
Rule and have children.
That's right. Man, there is not a pause. Tywin does not miss a beat and he's like, done. Do you think that maybe this was part of his game, part of Tywin's game, to get Jaime...
Part of his end game, like...
Yeah, to get Jaime to do something. Or maybe it's either that, or he was never...
I think he's just opportunistic. I don't think he...
He could just be that opportunistic, but he doesn't fucking miss a beat. It was not... He didn't give a moment's thought.
I think what was going to happen, he wasn't ever going to let Tyrion die.
That was my other point. I was either going to say, so he either was planning this, or he was never going to let Tyrion die. He was always going to ship him off to the Night's Watch.
I feel like that was more the case. But yeah. He saw something being offered. Yes. What he was arguing. He was like, yep, I'm taking it. I'll take it.
Yep. So Jaime should have kept his fucking mouth shut and seen what Tywin's going to say. Didn't say he's going to die. He's like, he's going to get...
the fate he deserves. The justice he deserves.
In kind.
Yeah.
Something, punishment in kind is what he's going to get.
That fits the crime, kind of. Punishment that fits the crime. So I don't think he thinks at all.
Because he didn't say murder, because that's what Jaime was saying. He's like, he's going to be killed. And he's like, no, he's going to get the punishment he deserves.
And I think that ties back to, never mind, that's later.
So I think Tywin never intended to give the death penalty to Tyrion. I think he was always going to basically exile him to the Night's Watch.
I agree.
But Jaime just couldn't help himself and jumped right into that agreement. I'll give up the King's Guard and go back to Castle of the Rock and have children.
Yeah, but how can you just wait around on something that's not sure?
He doesn't have a lot of guile.
No.
Unless it comes to fucking his sister. So we come back, Jaime stops by Tyrion and is like, hey, just plead for mercy, they're going to find you guilty, plead for mercy, and everything will be cool. And he's like, well, what do you mean? He's like, don't you trust me? And Tyrion's like, yeah, it seems like he's going to go along with it. Like, okay, so you've set something up, I'll plead for mercy. But they fucking call their final witness. And who's their final witness?
It's Shay. It turns out she didn't get on that boat.
She could have gotten on that boat, then came off the boat. But regardless, Shay is a witness for the prosecution, right? So for the queen. And she didn't bat an eye when she got up there and basically connected everyone else's stories, right?
Yep.
So, yeah, Tyrion hated him. He always planned on killing him. He stole the damn poison, and then him and Sansa poisoned Joffrey.
Yep, and Sansa, like, tied it back to, oh, Sansa's involved, too.
Now, here's a question. The boat that she was supposed to get on, was that Baelish's boat?
That is a good point.
So, the boat had to dock so he can make shit happen. But maybe he docked under false pretenses, and the captain said that he was going to Dorne to cover the boat's tracks.
But I don't think they would have taken a passenger if they were going to Dorne.
That's what they paid for, a passenger to Dorne.
Yeah, I meant the captain wouldn't have taken a passenger.
Unless Baelish saw an opportunity.
Yeah, but I doubt he knew who Shay was off the bat. Or does he?
He's got spies everywhere. He has as many spies as Varys.
That is true.
So it's a slim possibility, but maybe the boat she got on was Baelish's boat. And so as soon as Bronn dropped her off, he wrapped her up and sent her back to King's Landing as a gift to Cersei, and then Cersei used her. So here's the question. Was she coerced to give her testimony against Tyrion? She didn't look coerced. She wasn't crying. She didn't seem sad.
Yeah.
She seemed angry. So is this just like, you know, a woman scorn type thing where he sent her off and she's pissed off and so she's doing this testimony against him? Because if so, that's fucking weak.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a bigger plot here.
I would like to think that she's under some kind of coercion, even though her face didn't give any hints to that, no foreshadows that she was under coercion. Because if it's like a woman scorn type thing, that's going to kind of piss me off. Because we could have just skipped that damn scene and not had her as a witness and still had Tyrion or Tywin find... Well, I guess, here's the thing. Tyrion needed some kind of motivation to not take the plea, right?
Yeah.
That was his breaking point.
I wonder if that was Cersei's idea. Make sure that he...
She wasn't... I don't think, by the look on her face, I don't think she was happy with what Tyrion did.
No, but...
So what you're saying is Cersei used Shay to dig at Tyrion, right?
Yeah, I think
that. Got her to turn on him to make him feel bad, but then it didn't play out like she wanted. Because what'd he do?
I think that was the case. He, good. It was a nice monologue.
It was a pretty damn nice monologue.
He basically said, I'm on trial here, but it's not for what you think. It's for being a dwarf. And I think that kind of plays back into being sent to the Night's Watch. Yeah, if that is the crime that Tywin thinks that has been committed by Tyrion, is the fact that he's a dwarf. His punishment? Get out of my family. You're going to the Night's Watch.
So what you're saying is Tywin really doesn't believe he's the murderer of Joffrey, but he's going to get the punishment he deserves.
Yeah.
For being a dwarf.
Yep.
For killing his wife.
Yep.
Tyrion's mother. That's an interesting take on it. I can buy that. So, in the...
That was Tywin's
the
goal.
The punishment for embarrassment is exiled in the Night's Watch.
So it kind of goes back and says, you know, he says he's going to get the punishment to fit his crime. And then Tyrion goes and says it. My crime isn't murdering Joffrey. It's that I'm a dwarf.
It is true. And he knows his father pretty well.
Yeah.
I love how he started off. He's like, I'm guilty, you know, and like guilty of being a dwarf. That monologue is pretty fucking awesome. He goes off and basically tells everyone, he's like, I wish I was the monster you think I am. You know, I wish I was the monster you make me out to be, because I would have poisoned every one of you. I would die to see all of you choke on this poison. And then he ends it with what? What does he request?
I demand a trial by combat. Worked for him once, maybe it'll work for him again.
So he's going from the laws of men to the laws of gods, right? So he's going to let the gods decide. Trial by combat. And then Cersei's not too pleased with the outcome.
Yeah.
Because this gives Tyrion an out. If he's smart, and we all know he is, Cersei knows he is, this gives him a way out. Of course, Tywin's not pleased, and his brother Jaime's like, what the hell'd you do? What are you doing, man? You had an out. Because seriously, if he was banished to the Night's Watch...
Let's be honest here. He's not going to survive in the Night's Watch. He's no warrior. We all know that.
Well, that doesn't mean he can't just fucking leave.
Yeah, but then you're a deserter.
Who cares?
What happens to deserters? Ned Stark cuts their head off.
There's no Ned Stark to cut his head off. No one controls the North right now.
But I think...
I would have totally took the Night... I don't know. He didn't know it was going to be the Night's Watch. But if I knew it was the Night's Watch, I'd take the Night's Watch deal.
I thought he said something about taking the Black. Jaime did when he talked
to him. No, I don't think he said. He was like, because he didn't have a lot of time to explain, so he's just like, do you trust me? Take the deal. I'm going to take the Black. And then on my way back, I'd find my way to the ocean and then find a boat and be the fuck off of Westeros.
Yeah, but this is, at that point, Tyrion wouldn't have the money backing him. And number two, Tyrion knows what's going on. Maybe not the full picture of the whole invasion, but he was aware. He traveled to the wall before he went south because he was asked to plead.
I know.
So I think he knows the situation up north but is not what it seems.
It doesn't matter. That would give him an extra opportunity to get the hell out of Dodge. That's what I'm saying. Escaping the Night's Watch doesn't seem to be a fucking difficult task. All right?
I'm going to have to agree.
It but seems like you could escape pretty
easily. But someone
easily.
That famous, like, you would be, you showed up
so
anywhere.
So you just beeline it for Braavos, man.
That probably would work. But I don't think Tyrion can just sit out at this point. He's angry.
Yeah, he's angry at this point. You're right. He wants some fucking blood, and he's going to get it. So.
And I think he's smart enough to know what they were planning for him as far as sending him to the Night's Watch.
So we know with trial by combat. You get to pick champions, because I don't think...
This comes into our awesome...
So it's a trial by combat, so either you get to fight your accuser, right? So it'd be Cersei versus Tyrion. That's not going to happen.
This is the interesting part. I think Cersei's going to pick Jaime as her champion.
You think so?
I think so.
So who's Tyrion going to pick?
I think he's going to pick Jaime as well.
So it'll be like Jaime versus Jaime.
No, I don't think... Like, that. First choice would be Jaime, obviously.
I don't think so. I think now it would not be his first choice.
I think his second choice would be Bronn.
Bronn, right. Bronn's pretty good. So we have, what would it be, Bronn versus Jaime?
Yeah, I think we know how that would end.
Bronn would win.
Yeah.
I don't think Cersei would choose Jaime because she wants to win. I think she's smart enough not to choose him because he's kind of broken. We're going to go into some feedback here, and we're going to do a spoiler section. But it's not the spoiler section you're probably thinking about. It has nothing to do with books. What it's going to be is the coming up on the next episode segment. So every week, Game of Thrones, they put out a little like 20 to 30 second teaser for the next week's episode. And come back if you want to hear my theory on what's going to happen during the trial by combat. Right now, though, we have some feedback. Do you have anything you want to share from feedback?
Yeah, I think I'd like to share. We had an email because we butchered some of the storyline last week.
We did butcher it. I think we try to save ourselves on Facebook, on our social pages. We actually posted links to some of the backstory video that we fucked up.
A lot of people actually posted links for it, gave us some really good information.
He gave us the whole backstory in video.
Yeah.
For the Bran Stark versus the Mad King incident.
Yeah. And we also got from Kimberly Robinson, and she gave us basically a full synopsis of that background as well in written form, and it's pretty good.
You want to read part of her feedback?
Yeah, she says, Bran Stark was murdered by the Mad King when he and his father went to protest the Crown Prince essentially abducting Lyanna Stark, who was promised to Robert. The Mad King accused Lord Stark of treason. Lord Stark demanded trial by champion, which was right, and the Mad King said, fine, I choose fire as my champion. If you can overcome that, no problem. You can go free. Mad King and Lord Stark suspended over a pit of fire. Meanwhile, Brandon was placed in a choke rope with his sword slightly out of arm's reach. So basically, his father cooked to death and Brandon strangled himself. And
then, which is what the Mad King intended all the time, right?
Yep.
So she starts off, hi, it's fine to be unsullied. The nickname for people who haven't read the books. Maybe we should have called our cast the Unsullied. I like the Faceless Man. But for goodness sake, do your research before you broadcast. It was just painful to listen just now to you mangle all of Brandon Stark's history. And to that, we apologize.
Yes, we apologize.
We don't mean to mangle it. I know they touched on part of the history in the first season, but I've slept since then.
I will say, when I started to read the books, they made a much bigger point to interject the history of the stuff in there. And I haven't noticed.
It is kind of important, but...
Like, having started watching the shows, the backstory wasn't as highlighted as it seems to be in the books.
But it could have been... His dad could have died by any means, and I don't think it would have mattered. The whole point is... Robert Baratheon's on the throne now, and this is what happens after Robert Baratheon dies. So that's this storyline. They could do a whole nother series on the Rebellion. I mean, that's fodder for a whole new series or spinoff movie or something. A spinoff movie. There you go. We do apologize, but again, I think we knew we were off base a little bit. We did ask listeners to correct us, and they did.
Yep. She mentions another good feedback. Maesters are the equivalent of doctors, but I think... There are more knowledge-based, like scholars almost.
Well, maybe they're PhD doctors.
Yeah, maybe that's the case. Because I know that there's the links in their iron chain is like some different skill they've mastered, right? Or different...
It's kind of like a circle of knowledge or a link of knowledge. Yeah. So we were wrong about the... I said that Lysa had the maester ready.
And it's the septons.
It was the septum. No, it's not like they announced it, who it was. I don't know why maesters couldn't marry people. It's kind of like today, priests aren't the only one that marry people in this world. So, judges. And she also has some feedback for us from a few episodes ago, right? She's like, still, I have to love you guys for saying the Jaime Cersei thing and the sept was rape. The fact that I was blown away by two American men said that is actually pretty sad. But I was surprised. Luckily, I was sitting down at the time. So again, that goes back to earlier the season with the what people thought was the questionable rape scene, which we all know was a rape scene. I'd like to speak for all the quiet American men out there that there's actually more of us. They're just not as vocal or they don't have a podium to stand on. to talk about these things.
Or a podcast.
Or a podcast. It's hard. I would say that when you're speaking out against these things, I think there is an underlying vibe that, you know, you're being a traitor to your gender by calling rape rape or something. I don't know what kind of culture we've built here, but we don't participate in that culture and we call shit how we see it. And I know there's other men just like us because we talk to them on a daily basis. They just don't have the sound piece we do to reach more, you know, more of the world. It's unfortunate that image of American men is what has developed for everyone else to see. You know, the ugly American type thing. There are ugly Americans. I'm not trying to downplay that, but we're working on fixing that one person at a time. I butchered the name of the continent on which Slaver's Bay and Braavos exist. I kept saying EOS, but Michelle on G+, on Google Plus, she's like, guys, I'm listening to this podcast, enjoying it, but I'm cringing every time you're calling Essos EOS. It's Essos. Corrected. Thank you.
I would like to highlight Laws's contribution on the Facebook for all those nice videos or some of the backstory.
He also gave us a suggestion for like some content, things to bring up. So his question was, if you were sitting in the throne right now, who would you pick to be your hand?
I think I would choose Tywin.
You would choose Tywin?
He's the most, him or Stannis. If I actually had the right to the throne and like
Stannis
I had to choose
be
one of
your
those,
hand.
You're right. Probably Davos.
That was my pick, Davos.
Davos or... But Tywin, if you think about it, the dude is a brilliant
political
genius. It
would only work if you're a Lannister, though.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. But if you had someone who was willing, that's the case. They'd have to be willing. Because I don't think you can control Tywin. I think he would have to see you as the qualified person there.
Yeah, no. That was my pick, Davos, though. I think he's a fair guy. He's loyal. He likes to get things done. He also is not afraid to give a dissenting opinion. So, case in point, the whole Melisandre thing. He doesn't like it. Even though it would cost him his life, he had enough intestinal fortitude and honor to stand up for what he thought. And I value that in a person. Yeah, he just seems to be an all-around. Even though he used to be not a pirate, but a smuggler. I'd be willing to overlook that. I wouldn't even cut off his fingers. So I would pick Davos. That would be my right-hand man. Laws came back and he said the person he'd pick would be Mace Tyrell because he wants to rule it all. He just wants a flunky yes man.
Yep, that would be...
That would be a good choice if you want a flunky yes man.
The only other person I could think of would maybe be Ser Jorah.
Yeah, Jorah would be good. Yeah, he'd be a good hand.
Barristan's a bit of a yes man.
He likes to ingratiate himself, right?
Yeah.
Laws' only stipulation was we couldn't pick Tyrion. So I'm sure there's a lot of people who'd pick Tyrion to be their hand. So, listener, who would you pick?
I'd pick Tyrion over Tywin.
Yeah, Tyrion's a good choice, but that's like one guy you can't pick. I'd pick Davos. You pick Tywin. That's an awful choice. An awful, awful choice.
I stand by it. I still think, you know, that's someone who can get shit done.
He will get shit done, but it probably won't be in your favor. All right, everyone. Thanks for coming back and listening to us on the Faceless Men podcast. Remember, you can catch us on iTunes. Please, if you listen on iTunes, go out there and rate us. Give some stars. I know that we're getting lots of downloads, but we don't have lots of stars on iTunes. So you're either coming through us directly through madbrewlabs.com or maybe on Stitcher. But if you're listening to us through iTunes, please go out there and give us some reviews. I don't care if you're 1 star. Just get out there. It helps us get heard. You can catch us on Facebook at facebook.com/facelessmencast. On Twitter, at FacelessMenCast. Through email, FacelessMenCast@gmail.com. And I believe that's it. Welcome to our spoilers section. It's not really a spoiler section. It's more like we pick apart the 30 seconds of the teaser trailer for next week's episode. I'm going to go through all the little cutscenes first, and then we can pick it apart and talk about the things we want. So it's very pretty short. We see Tyrion. He's in the dungeons. Jaime's saying, you threw it all away! The deal, you know, you're going to die. And Tyrion's like, don't give up on me just yet.
I think that plays into the fact that I think that's part of his plan. Like, I think he had a plan. I think he has a bigger plan here.
Mm.
I think just like Theory, he has a plan.
And then we have some big dude chopping some guy's head off, and I think this is the Mountain. The casting for the Mountain has changed 3 times. I'm pretty sure this is the dude that cast for the Mountain this season.
Because if you look at the background, you see one of the knights, and it looks like a Westerosi knight.
Yeah, it looks like it might be at King's Landing somewhere.
It's my first guess was someone from... basically that butcher, whoever he is, that took over.
Oh, you're
Young Kai. Is it Young Kai? I think Young Kai.
or Astapor. I can't remember what they said.
I know Butcher, some Butcher took over one of the places. I know. No, I think it was Yunkai, because Astapor was the Masters are back in charge, I thought.
Okay. And then we see Daario talking to Daenerys. He's like, send me to kill someone, one of your enemies. Let me do what I do best. So he's obviously chomping at the bit, wanting to do something. Which enemy does she send him to? The Butcher?
I think that's going to be the case.
I bet so.
Because it's hard to kill all the Masters.
Yeah, that'd be a good face-off, right? So the Daario and his second son's going there, and he takes on the Butcher. That'd be a nice little side scene with him being able to chop somebody up. And then we see a scene with Arya. Arya just stabs someone to death, and Sandor makes a statement, next to you, I'm a walking bag of silver. And then we see Melisandre with Stannis' wife saying, hey, you can look into the light yourself for who knows fucking what.
I wonder if she's going to get her close to fire and just put her head in it.
I hope so. Just throw her in it.
Just full face fire.
We see Baelish talking with Sansa, you know, given the chance, what do we do to those who hurt the ones we love? And then we see Lysa getting ready to throw her off the parapet.
Was it the moon door?
No, it wasn't the moon door. It looked like, you know, the little offset square tops of a castle or something.
Yeah.
Calling her a liar. So, is Baelish, are they setting up Baelish as the mentor of Sansa? Is Sansa going to be mentored by mastermind of Baelish?
It seems like that. It definitely seems like that's the way
God it's happening. God damn it. You know, it's like, she knows he's the guy that fucked over her dad. And he's like, what do we do when given the opportunity to hurt
those
who hurt the ones that we love?
The answer to that is murder the shit out of them.
Yeah, so, what does Baelish, if Sansa followed those instructions, where does Baelish thinks he falls on her list? Seriously, I don't know what's going on there. But I'm going to talk about what I think is going to happen with the Trial by Combat. I'm pretty sure that dude's the Mountain. If they're showing him, I think he's going to be involved in the Trial by Combat. Cersei is going to pick the Mountain, who's like the baddest dude around. Not Jaime, the Mountain. What does that open up?
It opens up Jaime.
It doesn't. That's not who I'm thinking. Who wants to fucking fight the Mountain?
Oberon! Yeah! Yeah, I can see that. I can see that happening.
The Viper is going to be Tyrion's champion. Probably won't be by choice, but I bet the Viper comes to him. Or something like that.
You better
or, you know,
me.
Just like when... I can see Cersei being like, the Mountain's my champion. And then Oberon's like, well, I'm going to stand for the Dwarf. Kind of like Bronn did.
Yeah, I don't know how Tyrion's going to take... Or Tywin's going to take that. Because Tywin...
Tywin was already supposed to let him kill the Mountain.
Yeah, and if Cersei chooses him and the Mountain accepts... Isn't the Trial by Combat a death? Is there a death involved here?
Yeah.
The only chance then Oberon would have... would be stepping up to defend Tyrion.
Except, well, no, you're thinking that Tyrion would have somebody else like Bronn. It would be interesting to see Bronn
face
off. No,
I'm just saying that even that, if that is the case, the only guaranteed shot that Oberon would have.
Right. This would set up Oberon, like, very well, because it's not going to be a dirty murder. It'll be
a straight-up fight
with the Mountain. I don't know if that's... I mean, Oberon, they play up his poison shit, but he seems to be like a guy that wants to get in your face.
Yeah. With a knife.
Yeah, with whatever works. That's my take from it. So I'm pretty sure that that guy was cast as the Mountain. So they're showing him because he's going to be involved in the Trial by Combat. Or they're showing him because Oberyn's going to kill him. So either they're the two champions and Oberyn has his chance to kill the Mountain. Or next episode we're going to see Oberyn get his chance to kill the Mountain. Regardless, I think that he's going to get his chance to kill the Mountain, regardless of who the champions are.
I think that if that is the case, if Cersei chooses the Mountain as her champion, I think that will be the case. I think that that Oberon will step up.
So yeah, so it's either going to be...
That kind of locks Oberon in.
It could be Jaime versus Bronn. That is, I think that's equally plausible. So Cersei kind of... I could see Cersei forcing Jaime's hand, right? So, well, you're going to be the champion, and now you're going to... basically put your brother to the death, because if I guess the way it goes, if the champion loses, the person they're being champions for also dies, right?
Or maybe is
that how it works? Well, that's not how it worked at the Eyrie, though. So Lysa had a champion, right?
Only the prosecutor. The defendant, though, if their champion loses...
I think I had that all wrong. So the Trial by Combat, if your champion wins, then
your side is victorious.
If your champion loses, then you get punished by the court, however the court sees fit. I think that's how that works. Cersei will leverage Jaime to do bad things for her brother, for their brother, right?
Yeah.
Which would be sick and twisted, and that would also fit. So we're either going to see a Jaime Bronn confrontation, or we're going to see a Mountain Oberyn confrontation. But we may also see a Jaime-Bronn confrontation. So maybe the next episode will just be one nonstop fucking fight.
That or I'm throwing out a third option.
Okay, what's the third option?
I'm throwing out an option where Cersei picks somebody else, somebody really good, and Tyrion picks Jaime. And Cersei kind of has to back down. Can she, I don't know if she can call it off, withdraw her thing.
Yeah, I need to see what you're saying.
In order to save Jaime.
So Jaime's not as good as he used to be, so whoever she picked is better, and then she sees Jaime's about ready to die and calls it.
Yeah. Calls out, withdraws her, you know.
So those are three solid theories we have there. That's not too bad. I'm leaning on the Oberyn.
I'm leaning on that. Now, once you mentioned that, I'm like, yeah, that sounds plausible.
Yeah.
And that sounds exactly like, that's the one I want to see happen.
Well, I'm pretty sure we're going to see it happen. Those two are going to face off regardless. And I hope Oberyn comes out on top.
Agreed. I want to see the mountain get his.